SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, after a fun visit with Guy Torsiglieri, and can't wait. In fact, we got a pretty spectacular Friday, Saturday, Sunday planned. I must admit, we got Far Hills on Saturday. Friday, we're going to, I guess, cross off one of those names off the list of people that you have to see. Musical artists. We're going to go see Elton John in the Garden on Friday night. I just happened to notice that this goodbye Yellow Brick Road. This is the longest Yellow Brick Road in history because it's like 2 years that he's right. It's his big farewell, but it's a long goodbye because he's going to be in the Garden. Like 10 shows, and then next year, next spring, another 10. I don't know. Anyway, I saw that Elton John was going to be at the Garden Friday night, and so, all right. And then Far Hills Saturday, and then the Eagles on Sunday. Huh? Not so bad. I'll be good and exhausted by the time I have to leave Friday, the following Friday for Breeders' Cup. To go to Louisville. We're going to go to Louisville, figuratively anyway. John White joining us, of course, from Santa Anita. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
John, I'm going to utilize your odds-making aplomb to have kind of an overview discussion, and I do see there's a nice steady supply now of decisions coming and jock assignments. Saw Dave Grenig, with some movement between Rad Ortiz picking up Mind Control and John Velasquez getting Code of Honor. So there's those kinds of pieces of news coming out steadily, and I see where Ron Paolucci, he's going to run Mo Don't Know in the Dirt Mile, at least a candidate for the Dirt Mile. Meanwhile, John, the exercise of getting a handle on on who may go favored and who among the favorites. It always seems like every year in Breeders' Cup there's a handful of horses that you can count on or lean toward. I want to start to zero in on that. I mean, obviously there's a few decisions, but for the most part, I think we know or can anticipate who probably goes favored in some of the major races.
Well, it's tricky because, and I know this from having made the morning line for 5 Breeders' Cups, and it's tricky right up until entry day. I mean, in terms of who's showing up and who's running where, I mean, that's the real dynamic of this Breeders' Cup. Unlike the Kentucky Derby where, we have a pretty firm grip on who's running in the Kentucky Derby, but you do a great job keeping this list, but I mean, it's so much in flux. We haven't even had the pre-entries yet. So, by the way, you mentioned Elton John. My all-time favorite concert was a couple of years ago in Las Vegas with Elton John. Absolutely. It exceeded my expectations. I thought he was fabulous. And not only did he play his song, Steve, but I don't know if he'll do this here, but I would imagine he will. The discussion that he had between songs and explaining songs and just kind of talking with the audience, that was really a special part of it. So I'd never seen Elton John before, and I would have to rank it right up there at the top of my my concert list. Of course, I haven't been anywhere close to the number of concerts as our good friend Rick Hammerly. He's seen Bruce Springsteen and the Grateful Dead probably more times, just those two, than my entire concert catalog and myself combined. But Elton John I would put right up there at number one.
Nice.
But as far as, let's start with the Breeders' Cup Classic. And as far as the horses that would be the shortest prices, at this point, I mean, obviously, it's Accelerate, who I would think will be around 5-2, 3-1. And then you've got the two Bob Baffert runners, West Coast and McKenzie. I think they'll be around 5-1, 6-1. And then I think you'll have Mendelssohn and Catholic Boy, a couple of three-year-olds, around 8-1, 10-1. So I think those would be the shortest price horses for the Classic. And Accelerate, is he reliable? Is he vulnerable? Well, I would have to put him in the vulnerable category, quite frankly, particularly at the short price he's going to be, because of the fact that he's shipped one time this year and got beat, and he's coming off not one of the better performances of his career. Now, he did have a very good workout Sunday at Santa Anita, so that's encouraging. But, you know, it's just I can't really throw him into the reliable category, quite frankly. So to me, that makes the Classic interesting and enticing from a wagering standpoint, because of when you get a favorite that you feel is vulnerable, that means you might be getting some good value elsewhere. So I thought McKenzie's work Sunday was absolutely fantastic. Of course, I'm a little biased there. It's hard not to be, and I try to be as objective as I can. But considering on August 1st, I got 30-1 on him for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and he's not going to be anywhere close to 30-1. That is for sure. So, and it was interesting that West Coast and McKenzie, they closed as the co-second choices in the Breeders' Cup future wager that was just recently offered. So, I think both of those Baffert horses are going to be very, very tough, because West Coast also had for his standards especially, he's not the best workhorse in the world, and Sunday he had a really good work. But of the three works Sunday, Accelerate, West Coast, and McKenzie, I thought McKenzie's was the best, and I just don't think we really know how good he might be at this point. Remember, Baffert at the start of the year, that's who he thought it was going to win the Kentucky Derby from his barn, and then, of course, Justify burst on the scene in February, and McKenzie got hurt, and the rest, as they say, is history. Is Justify not only won the Kentucky Derby but swept the Triple Crown, but I think that door is open for McKenzie to kind of step up here and kind of show what he's made of now.
John, two horses to bring up, one that we know is running and is very quietly working away at Churchill. That's Thunder Snow, and really, actually, Mind Your Biscuits also, obviously, working along at Churchill. And they're apparently, you know, the decision coming fairly soon on Mind Your Biscuits. If he were to run in the Classic, how would that, in fact, two horses actually to include in this discussion, Roaring Lion, who Marcus Hirsch thinks very well could end up, if he comes at all, that he could end up in the Classic, and Mind Your Biscuits, and then Thunder Snow, and whether those other two participate or not, you know, if you are mentioning McKenzie, West Coast, Catholic Boy, Accelerate, and Mendelssohn as your five, you know, top shortest prices, that leaves Thunder Snow as no worse than or no better than the sixth choice. So that's got to be in the 12-15-1 range, which a lot of people will get behind. And then there's Mind Your Biscuits and potentially Roaring Lion.
I think Thunder Snow would be in the 10-12-15 area, somewhere in there. You know, certainly he would be live, although for those like myself that bet him in the Kentucky Derby, the fact that he's returning to the scene of the crime, so to speak, makes you give a look. You talk about vulnerable. Watching what Thunder Snow did at the start of that Kentucky Derby, that's still one of the lowlights of my entire wagering life. But, of course, then he would go on to win the Dubai World Cup impressively this year, defeating West Coast and Mooptahege, but that was a race that in Dubai to where that track really played into his favor, I think, on that occasion. However, he ran, you can't knock really too much his race in the Jockey Club Gold Cup at all. It was a very solid effort, and I'm not surprised. I mean, I've been on the Thunder Snow bandwagon. He was my pick, and I had money on him for the 2017 Kentucky Derby, and unfortunately he wanted to turn into a bucking bronco. But, you know, he's a quality horse, but I don't think you're going to see, you know, a swell of wagering support headed his way. And then you get wild cards, like Roaring Lion would be a wild card. You know, the fact that he is a Gosden and he is a quality, you know, he's a top-class colt. But I don't think, judging from what I'm seeing in the wagering in England, I don't think you would see him probably in that range of the horses that I listed for you. So he'd have to be above the 10, you know, at 10 to 1 at the lowest probably. Roaring Lion, which I think he would be live. I mean, I do. And, you know, between now and then, maybe I will sense that there would be more support. And that's, again, what makes this hard, is trying to forecast this when we don't even know, is he coming? And if he's coming, is he running in the Classic or is he running in the Turf? And this is all pure speculation at this point.
Well, one thing, and we'll get to it when we talk about the Turf, is that Enable is confirmed as of this morning. If you didn't see this early on in the day, Teddy Grimthorpe and the Judmont team confirming, and quite quickly, you know, her number was already low on you know, in the betting shops, and I'm going to and I do see a headline, price comes tumbling down. Let's see where she is.
She's got to be odds on, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. I think she was odds on before.
Yeah.
Even before she confirmed. Yeah, now yeah. They've got her basically at 4 to 5, 8 to 11.
I would have said 4 to 5.
Yeah, so 4 to 5 in the betting shops, and Roaring Lion 6 to 1, Waldgeist 6 to 1, Crystal Ocean 10, Talismanic 10. The lowest domestic.
What's interesting about that is, especially when you couch this in terms of, do you feel like they're reliable or vulnerable? Well, yeah, she's reliable. I mean, look at, she's rattled off all these wins, and that arc was fantastic. I mean, you know, to me, this is one of the, as I said on your show last week, I think that's one of the greatest training achievements of my life that I've seen, what John Gosden did to win a second arc at two different courses with this filly, who had had one race on synthetic in England. Supposedly, this is the first time in the history of the ARC that there was an ARC winner that had only run one time during the calendar year prior to the ARC. So, I mean, it reminds me of what Baffert did with Justify this year to win the Kentucky Derby with a horse that hadn't run as a two-year-old, which hadn't been done since 1882. But the reason I find it interesting that we're looking at Enable, there's going to be all this hype, and of course, just look at her form. I mean, her form is spectacular. I mean, it's just this littered with ones, and in top-class company. But you cannot forget that no ARC winner has ever won the Breeders' Cup Turf. So again, do you want to take 3 to 5 or 4 to 5 on somebody that is going to be trying to do something that's never been done before? And believe me, there is a very good reason, I think, that the fact that we've never seen an ARC winner win the Breeders' Cup Turf, and that is you have to run your tail off to win the ARC. That is a very taxing, tough race to win. And, you know, you can look at this both ways for Enable. This will be her third start off a layoff, and a lot of people feel that, you know, that's kind of the optimum situation. And there are a lot of people, they look for that third start off a layoff. On the other hand, you know, she certainly has bounce possibilities. I mean, she was absolutely out of gas at the end of the arc, and Gosden felt it was an eternity, those final yards of that race. And it's a race that, you know, could take something of a toll. Now, the fact that Gosden has committed to the race kind of tells you she's bounced out of it well enough for him to say that. And so that's a plus. But, I mean, like I say, she's going to have to ship halfway around the world. You know, she's never run in the United States. And believe me, when Dancing Brave can get beat in the arc, which I was right there at Oaktree in 1986, and Dancing Brave was an absolute monster. And the poor guy, when he came into Oak Tree, from the few days that he was there, he absolutely melted in the heat. And not only that, but was running in one of the toughest arc fields ever, as Manila won that race and beat Theatrical. And Manila won it even though Santos dropped his whip toward the end of the race. But, you know, when you watch somebody like a Dancing Brave get beat, it's like the fact when you see Spectacular Big get beat in the Belmont Stakes. It shows you that, you know, anybody can get beat at any time. And so, like I say, she's going to be a huge popular single and people are going to rely on her, but I'm not going to blame those people that are going to, you know, take the opposite approach and get some good numbers on somebody to maybe knock her off. And, you know, we'll just, you know, you have to give her the total respect that she deserves, because she does. But she's going to get that respect in the betting, and there will be absolutely zero value on her, quite frankly.
The marketplace, as an aside to the Classic, before we look at another division, Accelerate has really got a clear favoritism in the betting shops, basically as low as 5-2, and then up to basically as high as, you know, there's some 7-2s and no 4-1s. So
that's Accelerate, about 5-2, 3-1 is what I would envision him.
Well, and the betting shop numbers are, you know, they're always going to be a little at this time, you know, in terms of anti-post, they're going to be, you know, different and not, you know, they don't necessarily, because there's a lot of other horses, extraneous horses being offered that, you know, that you know, will slowly fade and the numbers will come into line. But Catholic Boy, West Coast, more or less co-second choices in the 6 and 7-1 range. Then you go, Mind Your Biscuits is trading between 10, basically 10-1, a couple of 12-1s. Mendelssohn, a couple of 9-1s, more typically around 11 and 12-1. Yoshida is getting some attention, as low as 9-1, as low as 8-1 actually at Coral, and as high as 14-1 at William Hill and Bet Victor. McKinsey is all over the board, as low as 5-1, and you can get 16-1 at Paddy Power right now on McKinsey. That's the high, but mostly 6 and 7-1 on McKinsey. Roaring Lion, 7-1, 10-1, 14-1, 16-1. You know, so some they're dangling some numbers to get some action. Then you've got Catalina Cruiser is still on a lot of boards. Then up to Thunder Snow, Paddy Power offering 28-1 on Thunder Snow right now. How about that number? That's twice as high, John, as anywhere else.
That's a nice number for sure. Now, the key about McKinsey here to me is, at least with this race, unlike the others that we're discussing, this one we get a little firmer handle because of the Churchill, because of the Breeders' Cup future wager, because that's American wagering, and that gives us a little more of an actual glimpse into how I think Americans will bet the race. And the fact that McKinsey was the actual second favorite, but both at 6-1 with West Coast, but there was more money on McKinsey, so he was the actual second favorite in that Breeders' Cup future wager. So, you know, I think McKinsey is going to be in that, as I said, 5-1, 6-1. I don't see how you can possibly get higher than 8. 8 would be like the highest I would think you could possibly get on him at this point. So, and again, it's really tough at this point to come up with these numbers from the standpoint we don't even know the total size of the field and who's actually in the race. I mean, that's why, you know, you give a little variance here, and it's interesting to see that there are certain horses, as you pointed out, in the betting shops over in England that have consistent numbers, like an Accelerate, where there isn't much variance, whereas there's other horses like McKinsey where they're Roaring Lion, where they're kind of all over the map.
let's talk about the distaff, and kind of touched on this earlier this morning with the word yesterday that Dave Greinig and conversation with Danny Gargan, and Gargan interested in participating in the distaff, and I at first I kind of scoffed at it, and I thought, you know, when he said that the distaff was coming up as an easy race, and I thought, well, that's a little bit of a, you know, a silly characterization. But Divine Miss Gray, you know, second in the Beldame, and then when you start to go through the list, if you're going to allow for Abel Tasman to, you know, if you let that Zenyatta performance, you know, kind of infiltrate your thinking, and then Monomoy Girl, who, you know, was courageous in the Cotillion, but did not look as good as she had earlier in the summer. Eskimo Kisses with the non-effort in the Spinster. You know, after that, you know, Wonder Godot and Val Dori and Wowcat and Blue Prize, etc. Champagne Problems, Ian Wilkes. We'll see about Feral and Mopetism and Pacific Wind. John, where do you break these out? Abel Tasman or Monomoy Girl as the favorite?
Well, I can't disagree with the thinking that this isn't the strongest distaff we've had in recent years. I mean, it really isn't. So, I mean, I can't blame anybody for hopping into the pool and taking a shot here, for sure. Especially as you just articulated that some of the big names in here got some question marks, starting with Abel Tasman and that very disappointing performance in the Zenyatta. I mean, she was 1-10 and got beat 10.5 lengths. Now, Bavert's had a number of sick horses at the barn. He said that Abel Tasman never got really sick, but he feels she was fighting off a bug and that she just, you know, wasn't herself. And again, these are animals. These aren't machines. So, I mean, we certainly can say that she deserves a mulligan here. I will also say that I don't think Santa Anita's ever been Abel Tasman's favorite track. And for a 1-10 shot, and for the people that were bridge jumping betting her to show, that's something I would have never touched her with a 10-foot pole in terms of these guys that want to bet $100,000 or something on somebody to show, because of the fact that Santa Anita just has never really, to me, been her best track. Now, she had a good workout here on October 12th, and as reported by Jay Pridman, and you know, you can see the video of that work, so that's a big sign, and the fact that Baffert, you know, is feeling a lot better about her. But on the other hand, you know, you just keep looking at that race, and it doesn't instill confidence, you know, when you run like she did in the Zenyatta. Monomoy Girl, you know, is coming off a race that, as you characterize it, and I can't disagree, was courageous, but it wasn't one of her better races for sure of the year, and you wonder if, you know, she's had a pretty hard campaign this year, to be honest, Monomoy Girl. She's run, you know, Dance These Dances and winning the Kentucky Oaks and the Acorn and the CCA Oaks and then the Cantillion to get disqualified. And you just wonder, you know, if maybe she's showing the effects a little bit toward the end of the year to where this campaign could take a bit of a toll. So, as far as favoritism, I at this point, if I had to make it between Abel Tasman and Monomoy Girl, I would give the slight lean to Monomoy Girl. I think the fact that she's got these strings of wins and Abel Tasman's coming off the big clunker, I would give the slight edge to Monomoy Girl at about 2-1, 5-2. Abel Tasman, I would then make maybe 5-2, 3-1, or maybe up to 7-2, but I don't think so. I think the overall body of work of Abel Tasman and Baffert and so forth, I think, would keep her probably under 7-2. So I would say 5-2, 3-1, but maybe 7-2. It's in that area. And then you kind of go up to Midnight Bisou, who was the one placed first through the disqualification cotillion. This is a very good filly. We've known that ever since we watched her win that Santa Anita Oaks in just sensational fashion earlier this year. And she didn't have the best of it in the Kentucky Oaks when she got beat by Monomoy Girl, and she couldn't catch Monomoy Girl in the CCA Oaks, but she beat her through the steward stand at Cotillion, in the Cotillion, and one thing about it, Midnight Bazoo ran a good race there in that Cotillion. It was the best of her career, and from a buyer standpoint, a 101. So I think she's the third choice in here at about 4-1, 5-1, and then you're going to jump up from those three. And maybe the next couple I would look at maybe would be Blue Prize, coming off that win, and the Spencer's got a nice winning streak going here, around 8-1, 10-1-ish. And Vale Dory, around 8-1, 10-1. You know what I find interesting about Vale Dory is the fact that she went off form. There's no question about it. I mean, she was a win machine, and then all of a sudden she was a lose machine. And I think this win in the Zenyatta could be a huge step back in the right direction for her. One of the things I found fascinating was the fact that Baffert observed after the Zenyatta that this was the first time ever since he's had her that when she felt the whip, she didn't swish her tail. And this was her first race with blinkers. So there's enough going on here with Vale Dory. Vale Dory had the look to me of, when fillies and mares really go off form, they generally don't snap back. You know, and I don't mean one race. You can give them one race. But like the Lady Secrets and the fillies that Rachel Alexander's, when they just kind of feel like, you know, I'm not all that interested in running anymore. I mean, they just kind of go off form. They don't snap back. And so the fact that Vale Dory was able to kind of snap. Now, obviously, Vale Dory was helped by the fact that the big favorite in the race, Abel Tasman, was a no-show. So that made the race a lot more winnable for Vale Dory, too. But my point is you're going to still get a pretty good price on this Vale Dory. And if this is the Vale Dory that we saw through 2017, Baffert also made the observation that he feels that the fierce battles that Vale Dory had with Stellar Wind, and there were some doozies, maybe took a mental and or physical toll on Vale Dory, and that, you know, that's why she went on form, and that it's just taken her this time to come back. And, you know, this is a pretty darn nice mare, this Vale Dory, so I think she's quite intriguing, and she's going to be a pretty nice price in the race because there's enough people. You know, they look at the 93 buyer and the Zenyatta, and that's not going to knock anybody's socks off. But I think another key for Vale Dory is what you mentioned at the outset of discussing this race, Steve, and that is the fact that I just don't think that this is the strongest distaff that we've had in recent years. It makes it winnable for, really, I think, just about anybody.
You know, you are pretty much right in line with the odds checker grid, and they've got Monomoy Girl as a clear favorite, and as low as half the price of Abel Tasman, and then Abel Tasman second, Midnight Bisou third, and basically, you know, 3-2 to 2-1 for Monomoy Girl, 3-1, 7-2 for Abel Tasman, 9-2-ish for Midnight Bisou. And interestingly, they've got Wildcat basically on a par with Vale Dory in the 8-1 range, John. Wildcat getting some respect, and then Blue Prize north of those two. So those are the top six, basically. Monomoy Girl, Abel Tasman, Midnight Bisou, then Vale Dory, Wildcat as sort of a co-fourth choice, Blue Prize fifth choice at 12-1, and then it kind of careens into Eskimo Kisses getting very little attention, although she's got kind of a wide array, as low as 10 and as high as 20, so she's kind of all over the board. And Wonder Godot getting very little attention, and then after that there's everybody in the 40-1 range, you know, some of the, you know, the other types that are nibbling on the outside.
So it's a real interesting race from the standpoint of you know, we don't have the big name distaffers heading into this, you know, to where you can have great confidence in them. You know, I wouldn't be for, let's take Monomoy Girl. It wouldn't surprise me if she won the race, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if she lost the race. And I have to say, quite frankly, the same thing about Abel Tasman. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if she won the race. We know how talented she is, but it also wouldn't surprise me if she lost the race. So,
well, you're dealing with the one thing about that's I would say, a real vulnerability, or at least an element that people are going to that is going to jump off the page at people, was that performance in the La Troyenne in the spring. And I think, you know, the people that are going to line up against Abel Tasman are going to say, well, she didn't run great, you know, back in the spring. Not entirely fair. I mean, considering, you know, what she did, you know, going back to the Kentucky Oaks and wet track, I suppose, you know, there is that element too. Who knows what we're going to get, at Churchill, you know, the first weekend in November. But I've already heard people murmuring about the spring performance. And of course that was off of a 5 month layoff, give or take. So, you know, she's got these two tremendous efforts at Belmont and Saratoga. And then she's got, you know, the two off efforts at Churchill and Santa Anita that are kind of staring at you. I mean, if she brings her best, if people want to make a stand with her on that assumption, I'll understand that, John, more than taking a stand against her.
Well, I think there's, you know, going to be plenty of people in both camps here, and that's part of what makes it very interesting here. I think there's going to be people kind of taking stands against Monomoy Gruel, you know, especially considering she's a three-year-old against older. And then you're going to have people taking a stand against Abel Tasman, and then you're going to have plenty of supporters for Monomoy Gruel. I mean, she's made a believer out of me that she's just a terrific filly, and like I say, I know what Abel Tasman is capable of, and I know what Bob Baffert is capable of. He's had a fair amount of success at Churchill Downs, winning some big races through the years. So,
you also, I mean, the key race, obviously, in analyzing this distaff will be this year's Kentucky Oaks, with the top, you know, all the top finishers basically reassembling. And, you know, there is one horse, John. It is interesting to me that the two, you know, South American runners, Wildcat and Valdori, are paired up. The horse that's ignored in this, what is Patty Gallagher doing with La Force? Is she coming?
Good question. I think quite possibly. I mean, I haven't heard that she isn't. So, and again, I certainly, if I were them, I would not, you know, I wouldn't stay home. I would run her. At the very least, she could, you know, hit the board. I think she's quite capable, I think, of hitting the board in this race. You know, she's been quite consistent in that regard, pretty much, going back more than a year. So I think she'd be a wonderful one for the people that are looking for underneath horses. And, you know, who knows? I mean, look, Spain won the distaff as a huge, but nobody paid any attention to once for Dwayne Lucas. So, I mean, I would definitely run her. She belongs in the race in my book.
Well, and she actually, given her style, she would benefit from Churchill's stretch, and
I agree.
Because I mean, she typically comes with one big run, and
yep.
at Santa Anita and Del Mar, that isn't gonna, a lot of times that's gonna put you on the defensive. But she has, she's finished behind Unique Bella and Valdori in her last three this year, and I took a shine to her, you know, during the summer, and she's also been versatile, you know, going from a mile to a mile and an eighth. So I'm going to reach out to Patty Gallagher and see what he's doing.
Price.
Oh, she'll be knocked down. You know, there's a lot of decisions that are going to be key in here, including Farrell, because when we start to think about, you know, where the pace is going to come from. Very anxious to see what Wayne Catalano, and in fact, the other day it came up, and Catalano's been, I wouldn't say coy about it, but he would not commit. I asked Marty McGee on Friday, because I kind of thought that they'd be thinking about cutting her back to the 7/8 in the filly and mare sprint. So her participation would only, you know, add to the pace up front. I'll find out about LaForce.
You mentioned the possibility of rain. If there was even the slightest, remotest chance of rain, I mean, that's, boy, she just does not like a wet track, that filly. I mean, boy, she just really, if somebody like spits on the track, she doesn't seem to like it. So that's one thing that would be, to me, a big problem for her, that they would almost really have to cross their fingers and hope that, you know, and chances are it won't be off. I mean, there's a better chance it'll be fast, but I know from following that filly, because I'm a kind of a feral fan, and but boy, she's kind of one of those, she can pop up and win a race, but boy, she can run some real clunkers too, and boy, she just doesn't seem to like the wet, you know, a wet track.
We'll see what keeping tabs on that one. Let's press forward and get a couple more of these conversations in, John. And what other division have we looked at?
Well, you know, you had talked about looking at the mile. I'd say let's just go ahead and skip over that one because, you know, I'm not sure what's necessarily coming over from Europe. I mean,
all right, that's fine. Sprint.
That looks wide open at this point. I mean, it's kind of a mishmash. So I'd say let's go on to the sprint.
Well, and the sprint, of course, has got its own issues, too, because we've got way too many horses that are, you know, the more this dirt mile, and granted, we do get the one-turn dirt mile this year that was the original intention of including it, but we do have, Promises Fulfilled, Firenze Fire, potentially Promises Fulfilled looks almost certain now per Dale Romans to be cross-entered in the dirt mile and the sprint. Haven't heard much from the Jason Service camp on Firenze. Whitmore and Limousine Liberal. I mean, this is the shortest option for Mind Your Biscuits. It doesn't seem like he would go in this direction. Obviously your first players are pretty clear when it comes to Roy H. and Imperial Hint.
Definitely. And, you know, like you say, there's kind of this complication of where everybody's running again. Promises Fulfilled for me, I'm kind of thinking this is where, I guess if I had to make the decision, this is where I would run him. For number one, it's got the bigger purse. And number two is I think he's got probably a better chance to win this than the dirt mile because of the fact this Catalina Cruiser looks like an absolute freak. And if I wouldn't mind just trying to beat Catalina Cruiser, especially considering John Sadler's, you know, less than enviable record shipping. So I mean, I'd say go ahead and take your shot there, but City of Light's not exactly chopped liver either. I mean, so you've got a real tough 1-2 punch just to start with in that dirt mile. And I think that 1-2 punch is actually, for me, tougher than the 1-2 punch of Imperial Hint Roy H. But even if you said it's virtually the same, I would then say, well, go for the $2 million purse over the $1 million purse to me. But I think Promise is fulfilled. I feel, you know, he's been sprinting so well that I wouldn't want to even stretch him back out to the mile, even though it's one turn. So, I mean, just my opinion, that's where I would go. In fact, he was seeking input from your listeners. So my input is, Mr. Romans, I would run in the sprint. And I would make Imperial Hand favored at 2-1, 5-2. Roy H. second choice at 3-1, 7-2. And what's interesting to me is that, if you like Roy H., the fact that you're probably going to get a better price than you will get on Imperial Hint, I find interesting from the standpoint Roy H. beat Imperial Hint to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint last year. So, in other words, it's not very often you would get the defending winner of a race at a better price than the horse that finished second behind him last year. But I don't think there's any question Imperial Hint will go favored here. He's been favored in his last several races. And I mean, that Vosburgh, when you watch that, I mean... that you talk about a paid workout, and that's what that was. I mean, you know, the good. This was a good Equibase comment, as writer, please, because that's exactly what as it was. So, but you know, let's say we take Imperial Hand out of the Vosburgh and put Roy H in there. Well, I think Roy H would have won the race, you know, quite easily himself. So, you know, we don't want to make too much of this Vosburgh, but the whole record this year of Imperial Hint is glittering, and you know he's an outstanding sprinter, there's no doubt about it, and he's the horse to beat, quite frankly, off his current form. But Roy H moved up so much off of his Bing Crosby when he got beat by Ransom the Moon to then turn the tables and beat Ransom the Moon in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. This Roy H is coming into this race, to me, you know, really primed, and I think he's sitting on a big one. So I may very well, in terms of my selections in my ExpressBet column, I think right now I'm leaning to picking Roy H, especially since I think you'll get the better price than Imperial Hint. And then, as you pointed out, those are the two, and then you're going to jump up. And if Impromise is Fulfilled does run here, he would be in the six. I would put him around the 6-1, 8-1 range, yeah. And then and Ransom the Moon, I would kind of put him in maybe the 6-1, 8-1 range, and then I think you kind of got to go from there.
And that is reflected too in the marketplace, in the anti-post market. You've got the Mind Your Biscuits, the Promises Fulfilled, XY Jet, Whitmore, Limousine Liberal, Ransom the Moon, Firenze Fire, all basically from 8-16-1. And the horse that is getting very little mention, and I'm gonna turn to my there we go, my PPs, and the horse that is kind of lurking here is the Asmussen, runner that won the De Francis. Switzerland, there he is. Switzerland.
Yeah, Switzerland, yeah.
Nobody's mentioning.
Well, you're right. Not, he is kind of intrigue. He's, you know, that was a big race he ran there, and he's got triple digits in three of his last four. He's one that I would, he's the kind that when we're sitting around talking about these races and you bring him up, I wouldn't talk you off him. I can tell you that right now. I mean, they've always been high on him. That's one thing I know, is that they've been high on him all year. And, he's got the one kind of a blip on the radar there in the Vanderbilt, but, his wins have been dominant, really. And, so he's certainly something to think about. I would agree with you.
Ransom the Moon, too. For those that haven't seen Phil D'Amato's post comments, he made the excellent point that you're not going to see the splits in the Breeders' Cup Sprint that Ransom the Moon had to deal with most recently in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship.
That's
a fair point. Ransom the Moon, as it happens, nobody will remember this. Ransom the Moon himself won't remember. But he ran it at Churchill, and in fact debuted at Churchill when Neil Howard had him. That it would be September of 2014. He was fifth that day. So he has run at Churchill, but I wouldn't necessarily hold that performance against him. I mean, he's had a fascinating career. He's done a little bit of everything, including going long on the turf before Phil D'Amato kind of refashioned him into a one-turn horse. And, those that are looking for a meltdown in the sprint, they're going to be looking to him and to Whitmore. I mean, those are the, assuming Whitmore, I mean, I'm pretty confident that Whitmore's going here. And then, of course, you got to, the decision from Ben Colebrook, too, is going to be interesting, because there's no reason, Limousine Liberal, with his record at Churchill, is a big option if he lands here It's, you know, it's an unusual, what's unusual about this group, John, shaping up for the sprint. There's like half the field on the lead and half the field that typically sits fifth or sixth. And so
right. that's a good observation. You're right.
It's kind of an unusual from that standpoint. You might want to be, you know, thinking about a horse that, you know, that can sit behind the speed, that has shown some ability, you know, to sit up close. And frankly, we think of Imperial Hint as this runoff speed ball, but actually, you know, he did show in the True North and in the Vanderbilt that he doesn't have to have the lead. So that might really come into play here for him.
What you're proposing is what might be the ideal trip in the race, I think, would fit
right.
Roy H. like a glove. Because I can see him sitting third, fourth, maybe fifth, but not very far off the pace, you know, within two, three lengths of the... You know, I think he would be sitting in maybe the ideal spot early. And like I say, the fact that he made such a quantum leap forward off of the Bing Crosby, you know, I think that the trip to Dubai kind of knocked him out. You know, we've seen that with a lot of horses, and I think it took him some time to kind of come back around. And, you know, I will say that if he hadn't run well in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, I would have kind of not be on board him much at all because of the fact I just would have thought, you know, he's not the horse he was last year. But I saw enough from him in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship that I think he definitely is, you know, quite possibly the same horse he was last year, which was good enough to beat Imperial Hint. So, and like I say, the key here to me is you're going to get the better price. I mean, we're not talking about a huge disparity because they're both, you know, they're going to be low prices, Imperial Hint and Roy H. both. But just from people talk about value, like I say, it's not very often that you're going to get the value of having the defender winner of the race be the better price than the horse that he beat last year, who will be the shorter price, Imperial Hint. You know, I will say this, rather than trying to bet on the winner of the race, I would like to bet on who will be the favorite, because I would bet pretty heavily on Imperial Hint that he'll go off as the favorite.
Yeah, that I would imagine as well. And you know, that trip that you're describing for Roy H., that's pretty much the trip that Mike Smith gave Amazombie when Bill Spahr won it at Churchill in 2011. That same kind of up close stalking and finish kind of a run, and there, you know, not that it's a surprise that West Coast sprinters have done well at Churchill. I mean, Kona Gold, I think about Kona Gold's win in 2000 there. Doug O'Neill won with Thor's Echo. That was on that gold rail that was magical that day for any number of horses, including who else got that trip inside? Street Sense. Street Sense in the Juvenile. There you go. There's one from that same day. Well, all right, John. This is a good exercise, and we're going to keep doing it. We'll keep our finger on this pulse as we get closer. And when do you anticipate your piece, your column?
That will be the Wednesday before the Breeders' Cup, so that'll be after the draws, and of course there's so many races and so forth that takes quite a bit of time to go through all that, as you know. So, but yeah, typically the Wednesday before the Breeders' Cup. One of the most popular features of that column is I not only pick 1-2-3s, but I also come up with, you know, a good price play in there, and some of my good price plays have come through and paid some big prices through the years, so that's actually become kind of a popular aspect to that Breeders' Cup selections column. And
that's one of the big, you know, that's one of the elements of a cohesive approach to this day, is to be very willing to, you know, add a fourth horse, even a fifth horse, in depending on the way in which you structure and whatever your preference is, whether it's multi-race wagers or whether it's deep exotics. You you absolutely are encouraged, you know, to be, you know, to take that extra, you know, that extra step and that extra horse, and nobody will dissuade any of you. I mean, don't be shy. You know, that horse that's haunting you, for instance, when you're you know, building your tickets, and you say, God, I don't want to leave this horse out, then don't. Go ahead and spend that extra money to include them. Try to do that, because this is the right day for it.
Well, the Breeders' Cup really is for horse players. I mean, it just is. It's you know, it was brought about by John Gaines, you know, for the sport and to help the breeders quite largely. It's why it's called the Breeders' Cup. But in a way, it's also kind of the horse players' cup, because, you know, if you're a horse player, it just doesn't get any better than the 2 days of the Breeders' Cup, with, you know, so many races and some of the, you know, possibilities for huge scores that you can get at the Breeders' Cup, particularly with the exotics that we have on the menu today. And, you know, you can really hit not just a home run, but you can hit a grand slam at the Breeders' Cup as a horse player. And that's why it's so popular with horse players.
No doubt. No doubt. John, I appreciate this. This is a good exercise, and I know people appreciate it, and we'll keep at it. Another 2 weeks before before it gets serious.
Yep. We're right on the doorstep, aren't we? You've already been breaking some eggs.
No, they got to do it. You got to be familiar with these fields and get out in front of it. So, I'm getting an answer as we speak. Patty Gallagher writing back. So we may have an answer within minutes on LaForce. John,
okay,
thanks.
I look forward to that.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
John White, everybody. Post Time John on Twitter. Let's take a break here and come back. We're going to hear from Eric Guillo, which is always entertaining. We owe Mike Maker a visit as well, and more. Stay with us coming up on top of Hour 3 at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.